This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon and welcome to Radio Energy News at 4 o'clock. I'm David Hogg, and coming up on today's show, the Met Police have arrested WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, the ghost of Brexit will continue to linger as the UK now has until Halloween to leave the European Union, and Edinburgh High Schools will soon be in need of extra classrooms due to a sharp rise in pupils. WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange has been arrested today at the Ecuadorian embassy in London following an extradition request from the United States. He was then charged by the US government with conspiracy to commit computer intrusion. The computer hacker took refuge in the embassy 7 years ago to avoid extradition to Sweden following accusations of sexual assault. Our reporter Molly Marchant has the story.
Julian Assange first came into the public spotlight in 2010 when his company, WikiLeaks, published a series of leaks online exposing classified documents belonging to the US government, including the Afghanistan and Iraqi war logs and the controversial Baghdad airstrikes video. It was in that same year that the now 47-year-old Australian was accused of sexual assault and rape and had an international arrest warrant issued against him by Sweden, where the attacks were alleged to have taken place. After avoiding police capture for almost 2 years, Assange was granted political asylum by Ecuador and remained in their London embassy for 7 years, avoiding extradition to the US, where he'd faced charges relating to the leaking of classified documents until he was removed today by British police. His dramatic arrest comes shortly after the Ecuadorian president, Lenin Moreno, made an announcement explaining that his country would be withdrawing Assange's asylum due to his repeated violations to international conventions. This follows WikiLeaks' recent publishing of private documents belonging to the Vatican early this year that exposed a struggle for power within the Catholic Church. Responding to his arrest, Prime Minister Theresa May expressed her feelings in the House of Commons.
I would like to thank the Metropolitan Police for carrying out their duties with great professionalism and to welcome the cooperation of the Ecuadorian government in bringing this matter to a resolution. Mr. Speaker, this goes to show that in the United Kingdom, no one is above the law.
The Foreign Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, welcomed the news of the arrest, tweeting that Assange is no hero and no one is above the law, thanking the Ecuadorian president for helping to ensure Assange faces justice. The Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman, Maria Sakharova, on the other hand, criticised the arrest, calling it the hand of democracy squeezing the throat of freedom. In dramatic footage of Assange's arrest, he can be heard shouting, "We must resist," clutching a copy of History of the National Security State and sporting a lengthy white beard in his first public appearance since 2017. Sir Alan Duncan, Foreign Minister, said, "It is absolutely right that Assange will face justice in the proper way in the UK. It is for the courts to decide what happens next. We are very grateful to the government of Ecuador under President Moreno for the action they have taken." We spoke to John Good, an extradition lawyer from Good & Stewart Law Agency, to find out what all this means.
The extradition is just a formalised process of enforcing judicial process in another country by returning the person physically so that he can be brought under the powers of the original or the originating courts. Because he's not in the United States physically, they have to try to ensure the case goes ahead. So then they put in a request to the UK under the European Extradition Act to have him extradited back to the United States.
It was announced at 2:20 that Assange had been charged with computer hacking conspiracy. The US Justice Department alleges that Assange conspired to break into a secret Pentagon computer to obtain classified documents. Assange has pled not guilty.
According to a study, half of Edinburgh high schools could be full in 3 years as pupil numbers rise by 7.5%. Despite efforts to increase school buildings over the recent years, local authorities still face an uphill battle. The capital needs an extra 47 secondary school classrooms and an equivalent of 3 primary schools by 2021. Our reporter Elena Cosbar provides more details.
Education represents the second largest spending on public service in the UK. The figure is equivalent to around 4.3% of the national income. Edinburgh Council plans almost £67 million investment to refurbish or build new primary and secondary schools across the capital as part of their budget over the next 3 years. Edinburgh's newest high school, Boroughmuir, which opened its doors in February, is already struggling to fit everyone in. The £31 million facility requires extra costs from the Edinburgh City Council to take in additional pupils. Councillor Callum Laidlaw discusses the importance of an increased budget in education.
I think definitely the alternative budget that the Conservative Group proposed in February for the council budget would have substantially increase the amount of money that we would spend on schooling. I think most people would agree that education has to be one of both the government and the council's top priorities. And I think that that's something the council should have been thinking about when it signed off the £200 million for the tram extension.
Not only Boroughmuir, but also Firhill and the Royal High are already over capacity. Portobello, James Gillespie's and St Thomas of Aquin's are forecast to be over capacity by the start of new academic term. An Edinburgh teacher who wishes to remain anonymous expressed her opinion.
It's a tricky job, and even if you've got 25 primary ones in your class, which is the maximum, and you've got a lot of the kids that are coming into school that aren't even body trained, and you know they can't hardly speak because they've not been spoken to, and you're expecting teachers to deal with that without getting proper investment in, it's just going to drive good teachers out of the profession.
According to the council's projections, only 4 out of 23 Edinburgh high schools will have enough space for all their pupils by 2025. The expansion of schools will ensure that children are given the best education and attention.
Another day, another battle over Brexit. The Prime Minister has been given an extension until the end of October. The 31st of October is the new deadline for Brexit, making Halloween extra scary. Will it be a trick-or-treat this year? Who knows? However, there is a possibility of leaving sooner. The Prime Minister is determined to leave before the EU parliamentary elections, or a no deal may still be on the table. Our correspondent Brendan Duggan reports.
It is the end of another round of Brexit, and Theresa May has got the extension that she wanted. But has she won the fight? The European Council have agreed to extend the Brexit deadline to the 31st of October. The Prime Minister assures Parliament that Britain can leave before the mandatory EU Parliament elections on the 23rd of May, as long as her deal can be put through in the upcoming weeks. But is this a win for the Prime Minister? The European Council did not accept Theresa May's request for a short extension till June, but did not set a longer 2020 deadline like previously thought. Theresa May also gets her flex tension, meaning that the UK can leave the EU sooner if a deal is reached for the 31st of October. Mrs May is appealing to MPs to look again. Labour and SNP have welcomed the new delay to Brexit, along with Shadow Secretary Richard Burgeon, who pleads for Mrs May to reconsider her red lines.
It's really time for Theresa May to reconsider her red lines. I think it's a shame she's waited until the 11th hour to engage in these meaningful discussions.
However, the Prime Minister hasn't escaped no deal yet. If the country does not leave in the first week of May, but still refuses to hold elections for the European Parliament, then no deal is imminent. Here's a quick recap of the reactions to last night's news.
I continue to believe we need to leave the EU with a deal as soon as possible.
This means an additional 6 months for the UK. Do not waste this time.
It would be absolutely catastrophic for us to face the people again in a general election if we have not delivered Brexit.
We're almost like starting from the beginning at the moment in a very short space of time.
Really three options for them is to revoke Article 50 and stay in the European Union, to accept the deal that's on the table, or to leave with no deal.
I spoke to Alan Convery, the head of British politics at Edinburgh University. We discussed the current state of the Conservative Party in the face of Brexit negotiations.
The Conservative Party is a very pro-Brexit membership, whereas the Parliamentary Conservative Party is a much more split on the issue. Very difficult. We think it would be very difficult for the Conservative Party if Brexit was not delivered in terms of its own internal equilibrium.
We later spoke about the potential harm that the growing Brexit Party could have on the Conservatives.
In terms of seats, we can't tell, but in terms of their effect on the system, it depends. If you split the centre, so in a first-past-the-post system, if you split the vote on the centre-right between the Conservatives and another party, it might allow in some seats the Labour Party to come through the middle. And that's what the Conservative Party, I think, would be more worried about splitting the right-wing vote than necessarily losing a lot of seats, perhaps.
Mr. Convery also voiced concerns for the up-and-coming EU vote and its effect on the Brexit voting public.
But it's very difficult to predict how people will react to it. I think, though, for the Conservative Party, it might have a more destabilising impact because it really will bring home the fact to people that we haven't left yet. If you get a polling card through the door that says you have to vote in European parliamentary elections, we just don't know what the effect that will be on people who think that, well, I legitimately voted for Brexit and the government's failed to deliver it.
There are those who believe Mrs May should not remain in the driver's seat. This includes her own partners in the DUP and some in Parliament. Another person who has clashed with Theresa May on several occasions is SNP MP Ian Blackford. I spoke to Ian Blackford, who still believes Brexit should be put back to the people.
I suppose in one sense is I'm relieved that the cliff edge of tomorrow, the 12th of April, has been removed, but I had hoped in all reality that the EU had given us a longer extension, so it is something of a compromise.
There's a lot of talk of the Prime Minister should step down before October. Do you share that feeling?
She's a Prime Minister minister that has failed. She should have gone some time ago. But we do face the situation that if she does go, there's going to be a leadership contest in the Tory party. Now, when she was elected, that was a contest that only took place amongst the MPs. It didn't even take place amongst the Tory members. Maybe it will be the case that there would be an election contest in front of the Tory members. But the rest of us are not going to have any say on that. And there is a real risk, and I would say probably not just a risk, but almost a racing certainty, that the Tories would elect a right-wing Brexiteer as the Prime Minister. And where that would leave us in terms of the UK's negotiating position, it's a situation that fills me with dread. But I think, certainly for the people of Scotland, it's increasingly clear that Westminster isn't working for us, and we need to think about what options we have in Scotland as well, in particular the opportunity to have a conversation with the people of Scotland as whether they wish to become an independent country.
Yesterday at Prime Minister's Question Time, Theresa May critiqued you on the fact that the Scottish referendum would have taken Scotland out of the EU. Would you care to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, it really is ridiculous because she didn't answer the question that I was putting to her. But, I mean, you can see from statements which have come from Guy Verhofstadt, statements that have even come from the Spanish government over the course of the last few days, Europe is making it absolutely crystal clear that if Scotland does become independent, then Scotland will be welcomed as a member of the European Union. I don't think there is any doubt or any dubiety about that.
Why are the SNP so determined for the UK to stay in Europe?
Well, I think it's actually in all our interest to do so. I don't think there is such a thing as a good Brexit. The government's own economic analysis published last November showed the impact of a range of Brexit scenarios, but they all show the UK being poorer. I don't want to see anybody having the consequences, these negative consequences of leaving the European Union. So we will argue to try and make sure that we protect the interests of everybody within the UK, but ultimately with the responsibility we've got is to protect the economic interests of the people of Scotland.
You mentioned that you believe that there should be another people's vote, but also that there should be another Scottish referendum. Surely if we leave the EU, there will be a better chance for us to get another independence vote.
Well, I think there is an issue of timing. I think it's clear that there has been an awful lot of people clamouring for the opportunity to have a referendum, particularly given that we were told in 2014 that if Scotland stayed in the UK, then our rights as EU citizens would be respected. That's changed. There's been a material change in circumstances. And I think we've got to take that opportunity over the transition period to have a conversation with people in Scotland as to whether or not they do wish to stay.
SNP MP Ian Blackbird talking to our correspondent Brendan Duggan. I'm now joined in the studio by news correspondent Alex Grant.
Thank you, David. After 30 years in power, Omar al-Bashir, the controversial leader of Sudan, has been forced to resign by the Sudanese military. Days of protests have rocked the country with reports of multiple injuries and tear gas being fired as thousands of protesters gathered outside the military headquarters in Khartoum. The situation remains uncertain, however, al-Bashir has now been arrested by military officials whilst a transitional council will be set up in order to run the country. We spoke to Sudanese reporter Ahmed Hikmat, currently amongst the protests.
And we're still waiting for a brighter day, and may we see the light by the end of the tunnel. No, I wouldn't say there are, there were a few gunshots, but I think it's more of a celebratory gunshot. By the military itself, because the military already and the rapid forces have joined here together to protect the people and to maintain our security.
The world's largest election has kicked off today, with voting opening in 91 constituencies across India. 900 million people are eligible to vote in the election spanning 6 weeks. Current Prime Minister Narendra Modi of the BJP has been the first in decades to secure a majority government, but is expected to lose seats as powerful regional parties form new alliances. The Hindu nationalist has been under fire for the recent situation in Kashmir, with many claiming that Muslims face oppression across the country. Jackie Bird, the face of Report in Scotland, has announced a departure from the programme. After over 3 decades presenting news throughout Scotland, Miss Bird presented a final programme at approximately 6:30 on Wednesday evening. She left the studio with many unaware of her decision to pursue other avenues away from the news desk. Jack Shepherd, found guilty of killing Charlotte Brown in a speedboat crash on the River Thames, has been sentenced to a further 6 months today for fleeing the country. Shepherd previously fled before being sentenced to 6 years in prison for manslaughter and has now pleaded guilty to breaching bail and absconding and is due to begin his newly increased 6.5-year sentence with immediate effect. The victim's family spoke of their relief following the decision.
As a family, we are relieved that Jack Shepherd is now back in the country and commencing his prison sentence. It's a step closer to justice for Charlie.
Alex Grant there with some other news stories from today. You're listening to Radio Energy News. Still to come on today's programme, we've got news on the announced sleeper trains travelling between Edinburgh and London. We preview the upcoming Edinburgh Science Festival, and we'll have our sports correspondent, Kerry Pollock, in the studio. But first, recent studies suggest one in five asthma cases in children could be linked to toxic vehicle pollution. The UK was ranked 24th worst in the world for traffic pollution, and the Lancet Planetary Health revealed the statistics earlier today. Our correspondent, Corey Young, reports.
Constant traffic build-up in Edinburgh can prove to be an annoyance when trying to get from A to Z, but could it also be having an impact on our health? George Washington University revealed that 1 in 10 asthma cases in children may be due to air pollution from traffic fumes. Out of 194 countries, the UK ranked the 24th worst country for childhood asthma linked to fuel fumes, with the US following closely behind at 25th. We talked to Dr. Mona El-Haj from Dumfries Hospital, who discussed the susceptibility of asthma between children in comparison to adults.
Children are particularly vulnerable compared to adults because their lungs are smaller, they can't compensate well for pollution, where adult lungs are different and adults generally cope better. In highly polluted areas, children are exposed to lots of chemicals which can affect them to a huge extent, because as their cells are very active, continue to divide, continue to grow, various other forms of pollution can affect them differently.
With the pollution specifically affecting children the worst, some attempts have been made to prevent this by various campaigns. In particular, Greenpeace, an environmental organisation which aims to help protect the natural world, has been fighting for the UK government to put an end to new diesel cars on the road. Ria Ahmed, a clean air campaigner from Greenpeace, spoke about the wider impacts of air pollution.
Pollution and the health crisis and the climate emergency that lots of these children are talking about actually go hand in hand. It is about their health and it is about their future. And we need to keep that in mind, that when children are asking questions for politicians to act, it's actually both at the local level and at the global level. It's all our future at stake. I think these things are connected. While they might not seem connected at the first instance, but all these things are connected. We need to act now and we need to act fast.
A new fleet of Caledonian sleeper trains has been announced to launch in June. The £150 million has been invested in a new fleet with 75 new carriages, some of which will have double bedrooms with an ensuite and a shower. The train will initially offer routes between the capital cities of Scotland and England and will later include a Scottish Highland route. Our reporter Kieran Webster has more.
This is the sound of the new Caledonian sleeper train, described as a hotel on wheels. The rail service has seen £150 million of investment from travel franchise Serco. The fleet is set to be waiting at platforms in June. It will feature 75 new carriages, 14 accessible carriages, ensuite double bedrooms for the first time, and 347 toilets. The routes will continue to link Edinburgh, Glasgow and Aberdeen to London, with new services focused on the Highlands including Fort William and Inverness. Popular YouTuber and rail enthusiast Paul Lucas gave us his train of thought.
I think the new Caledonian sleeper trains, that their main appeal is the fact they're much higher spec than what previously went before. Now they've really revamped the product, everything is brand spanking new, and it's actually better, I think, than any of the sleeper trains I've taken in continental Europe. But more and more people now are realising that the sleeper train actually solves the accommodation and travel problems all in one go, and the higher quality a product you can offer, everything that you would expect in a 3- or 4-star hotel, the better a product you can offer, the more people you can entice away from low-fare airlines. That is pretty much the appeal as far as I can see.
The revamped sleeper trains hope to create a comfortable experience for both commuters and tourists hoping to travel Scotland and our neighbouring country. Along with the hotel-like amenities, travellers will also benefit from reclining seats, hotel-style key card systems and free onboard Wi-Fi. These unique perks are in a bid to attract customers. In a bid to contest concerns about noisy and sleep-disrupting journeys, Serco's managing director, Ryan Flaherty, has reassured potential customers that the trains are gentle and are unnoticeable to guests who are asleep. On their website, Ryan Flaherty commented,
"So there's a brand new rolling stock, brand new train, so it's going to have a lot more comfort around it, it's going to be a lot quieter."
The trains are on track to be full steam ahead just in time for summer.
This year is the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing, The Trump administration has announced that they want to return to the moon within the next 5 years. With this and yesterday's news of the first photograph of a black hole, it seems as if science is all around us. To acknowledge this, the theme of the annual Edinburgh Science Festival this year is Frontiers. The festival runs for 2 weeks with events all over the city. Our reporter Rebecca Axerup has more.
3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff.
50 years since the first man walked on the moon, and the Edinburgh Science Festival is back. The festival is hosted by Edinburgh Science. Edinburgh Science is an educational charity which was set up in 1989. It aims to inspire people of all ages and backgrounds to discover science. Edinburgh Science hosts the festival every year. I met with Graham Richardson at Pleasance Theatre. Mr. Richardson is part of the creative team at Edinburgh Science, and this year he is running events such as the Gadget Factory at Pleasance Theatre.
I work in the creative team at Edinburgh Science. We have a lot of programmes that we do all year round, but it's important that there is a hub at some point where we can bring lots of people together, be they the young people of Edinburgh, be they the adults of Edinburgh who know a lot about science or who are just a bit curious, so we can all debate together and talk about the future of science, of climate.
I attended one of the gadget sessions where children were making a snail gadget with blinking eyes. Lauren Hockenhall, another member of the creative team at Edinburgh Science, explained the process to me.
Okay. I've already gone through and soldered on the two different types of resistors, capacitors and the transistors.
Uh-huh.
So that's all the things that make the lights flash. And I'm just about to solder the lights on, the LEDs.
I also spoke to Kitty and Marcus, who were at the event.
We're doing like making badges and they like light up when we're done. And it's fun.
We are making a light up snail. I don't like touching smolder. It's sticky. I don't like sticky things.
The festival comes to an end next Saturday, the 21st of April. So make sure that you get out there and explore what Edinburgh Science has to offer.
Now, the latest sport highlights on Radio Energy.
I'm now joined by our sports correspondent, Kerry Pollock, with today's sporting headlines.
Manchester United lost 1-0 to Barcelona in the first leg of the quarter-final of the Champions League last night. Despite the defeat, United midfielder Paul Pogba remains hopeful that they can progress to the semi-final.
We believe that we can beat them. We are Manchester United, even if they are Barcelona, we are Manchester United and we play in Champions League like they do and we can go through, of course.
Hibs chief executive Leanne Dempster has announced that the club will spend £100,000 on what she describes as the best CCTV system in the country. The club will also say that they have explored the use of sniffer dogs when both home and away fans are entering the ground. These actions come after two recent incidents that occurred at Easter Road. Hibs correspondent of the Edinburgh Evening News, David Hardy, told us about the investment.
The problem with the current system is that it can't focus on every area constantly. It moves around, so it can miss incidents. My understanding of the new one is that they'll be able to watch every seat for every minute of the game.
Hearts manager Craig Levine has released an update on the squad's fitness ahead of the Scottish Cup semi-final against Inverness on Saturday. He hopes that he will have a fully fit squad with the exception of striker Stephen Naismith and left-back Ben Garuccio, who are both out with long-term injuries. Rugby Australia and the New South Wales Rugby Union have suspended the fullback Israel Falau after he made homophobic comments on Instagram last night. Australia rugby legend La'alu Sir Michael Jones expressed his disappointment.
Being able to express yourself is important, but doing it respectfully and I suppose with wisdom. And as I mentioned, there needs to be a lot of love and a lot of grace, particularly as Christians and people of faith in those spaces.
And in golf, today is the first day of the 2019 Masters in Augusta. The competition will run over 4 days with the final rounds being played on Sunday. Four-time Master winner Tiger Woods is confident that he could claim his 15th major career title.
I've proven that I can do it and I put myself there with a chance to, you know, win the last two major championships of the year. I was right there and just needed to have a couple more things go my way and not throw away a couple shots here and there.
Kerry Pollock there with the sport. Finally, after a two-year wait, the final season of the popular HBO original series Game of Thrones is set to air in the US this Sunday. UK viewers will be able to watch the new episode this Monday. The series garnered a loyal fan base worldwide and has become a cultural phenomenon over the last 8 years. Our reporter Veronica Contopolo tells us about the format of the new series and how some Scottish superfans will be celebrating its release.
Political tension, house fighting, funny British accents, fear of the unknown, and fathomable plot twists, ruthless backstabbing. In case you're mistaken, no, it is not Brexit we're talking about. Finally, after a year's anticipation, the 8th season of Game of Thrones will air this weekend. Well, British fans will unfortunately have to wait until 9 p.m. on Monday the 15th to dive into the worlds of Westeros once again. Season 8 will consist of 6 1.5-hour long episodes, so while there will be less episodes than in previous seasons, viewers will indulge in almost movie-length installments. What can we expect from the 8th season of Game of Thrones?
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
What we know for sure is that winter is certainly coming. Actresses Maisie Williams and Sophie Turner spoke to Good Morning America to give fans a taste of what's to come.
I think it's hard to know how people predict it because we have people on set who were predicting it before we like got the final season. I don't know if it's what people are expecting. I don't know that people are...
I think people, some people will be satisfied and others not so much.
Edinburgh resident Toby Cook, who worked as a body double for season 4 of Game of Thrones, provided us with some insight into what it was like working in such a renowned production.
I was a body double for Tommen for season 4, and I did some stand-in parts for Joffrey, for Joffrey's wedding with Marjorie. Charles Chapman, who was the actor who played Tommen, he was essentially too young, which is why I was sort of drafted in as a sort of body double for him, because I had to do the full day's work. I know I see loads of posts on Facebook, and I'm sure it's a really good TV show, but I'm just not into the whole, I don't know, I just don't like medieval. I like the season that I was in. I was like, just going through season 4. Oh, there I am. Oh, yep, that's my hair. I'd already known of Jon Snow because my mum just didn't shut up about it, and when she saw him she was like, oh my god, there's Jon Snow. She was pointing out Jon Snow sitting have a cigarette.
There are a number of events around Scotland that fans can attend to celebrate this release. Students at the University of Dundee can travel to Liar Bar, where bar manager David Shields is hosting a pub quiz and live screening of the newest episode.
So the quiz is running just before we show the live season premiere, which will be on at like 2 o'clock in the morning. On Sunday. The quiz is run by our student executive, and that's being run to raise money for our kind of selected charity for the year. Last time we did a big season premiere, we had probably about 250 in the building to watch. Put on some bespoke cocktails as well. Just a couple of things to kind of make people who are attending feel that it's a bit more of a special event. So we've got some pictures. One's called A Red Wedding. We've got one called Milk of the Poppy. Another one called Hold the Door.
We asked the public if regular people share the same excitement for the release.
I'm excited. Just because it's been a long time coming, 2 years.
Quite excited.
Yeah, quite excited, but I need to rewatch the previous ones.
Not really, because I don't watch it now. Just never gotten into it.
Even though it's unknown who will take the Iron Throne, one thing is certain. We know nothing of Jon Snow.
Winter may be coming in Westeros, but tonight in Edinburgh it will be mostly cloudy with a few sunny intervals. There will be some light winds and temperatures will be at a high of 10 and a low of 6. Elsewhere in Dumfries, Galloway and the Borders, most cloud will disperse throughout the evening. However, it will become chilly with patchy frost away from the coast. On the road, the A902 is busy but moving before the A901 North Junction Street in Leith, and there's queuing traffic both ways on the Edinburgh City Bypass on the Sheriff Hall roundabout. That's all we have time for on today's Radio Energy News. Before we go, a brief recap of the headlines. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been charged by the US government with conspiracy to commit computer intrusion. Brexit could carry on until October the 31st, and Edinburgh's high schools need almost 50 extra classrooms due to a 7.5% rise in pupils. Thank you for listening to Radio Energy News. I'm David Hogg, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
This is Radio Energy. Edinburgh, Napier, Radio Group. Talk, tunes, tales, and talent. From Edinburgh to you.